hands to her cheeks to will away the flush that came at the memory, she replied. I don't know. I never expected any of this. He did not reply, and she asked, Why marry me, Your Grace?
I would prefer you not call me that.
She tilted her head.
Your Grace?
I don't like it.
All right, she said slowly, surprised less by the request than she was by the simple way he made it, as though it were perfectly ordinary. Why marry me? His gaze did not leave the hedge at the far end of the garden.
You've asked before. The answer has not changed. You're convenient.
And I positively swooned, she said dryly. He cut her a look, and she smiled. He did not.
Why do you sacrifice yourself for your family?
What choice do I have?
The choice that ends with you having the life you wish.
She smiled softly. Does anyone really have that life?
Some of us have the chance of it, he replied, distracted again.
Not you, though. He shook his head.
No.
She wondered what had made this man, a prince among men, handsome and rich and titled, so lost to his own future that he chose a loveless marriage over the chance of a life he wished. Have you family?
No.
The answer was clipped and unemotional. She knew his father had died years earlier, but...
No mother?
No.
Siblings?
Gone.
How tragic. No wonder he was so odd. I'm sorry, she said. I might be irritated with Arthur right now, but I do care for him.
Why?
She thought for a moment. Well, he is a good brother and a good husband. A good father.
I've seen no evidence of his husbanding or fathering, but I can tell you he does not seem a good brother.
She pressed her lips together at that assessment. Silence fell, until Felicity almost thought he'd forgotten she was there. He watched the hedgerow in the distance, his stare blank. And then, after a long moment, he said,
It must be nice, he said, having a partner in the past.
It was. Arthur drove her mad, and she was irate that he'd kept the secret of their family's finances from her, even more so that he'd attempted to manipulate her future for it. But he was her brother and her friend, and she had trouble believing he didn't wish the best for her. Even shrouded in uncertainty, she knew her family wished her well. They hadn't forced this marriage, after all. She had. Even though now she did not wish it. Even though now she wished for something else indeed. Even though now she wished for a different partner. A different future. An impossible one. But it was not impossible for him, and she felt she had to point it out. You realize that without me, you might still find a partner in the future. As though he'd been far away, he returned to her then, and she realized how close he was, recognized the conflict in his eyes, a beautiful golden brown, a strange, unsettling echo of another pair of eyes that had threatened to consume her. Before she could allow her thoughts to wander to Devil, the Duke spoke.
I can't find her.
I am not she. Felicity offered him a small smile.
And I am not he.
No, you're not. She took a breath. And so?
And so bans shall be posted, and I shall send an announcement to the news for Monday.
It was as simple as that.
And in 3 weeks you may begin anew, a duchess with your family return to money, power, success. On one condition, the Duke said absently, his attention returned to the hedge. One kiss.
She stilled. Excuse me?
I think I was clear, the Duke said. I should like a kiss.
Now? He nodded.
Precisely.
Her brows stitched together. She did not know much about men, she would allow, but there was no doubt in her mind that this one did not wish to kiss her. Not really. Why?
Does it matter?
Considering you've made it more than clear that you've no interest in passion with me, yes, honestly, it does. He closed the distance between them.
Fair enough, My reason is that I wish it.
She stopped. One kiss.
He lowered his head toward her, blocking her view of the gardens with his broad shoulders and his handsome face.
Just one.
Why not, she thought. Why not kiss him and see if kisses were all as magnificent as the one devil had given her in the ice hold? The Duke was near.
I shan't kiss you if you don't allow it.
Her gaze flew to his. Perhaps the kisses with devil hadn't been special. Perhaps it had been plain old ordinary kissing. Why wouldn't all kissing be the same, she whispered.
She wouldn't know it unless she kissed another man, and she just so happened to have one. You are speaking to yourself, he said, watching her,
his amber eyes seeing far more than she'd like.
I won't be your first kiss, will I?
I don't see how that's your business, she said pertly. I shan't be your first kiss either. He didn't reply, instead setting his hands to her arms and turning her so that her back was to the hedge he'd found so fascinating all afternoon. Once she was positioned carefully, for whatever reason, he returned his attention to the matter at hand, leaned in, and pressed his lips to hers. It was uneventful. His lips were firm and warm and utterly unmoving, and not only in the sense that the kiss itself did not move her, he also quite literally did not move. He set his lips firmly against hers and kissed her as though he were a statue. A handsome statue, she would allow, but a statue nonetheless. It was nothing even in the same realm as the kiss she'd received from Devil. The realization had barely formed when he lifted his head and released her, like he'd been burned, and not in a mothy, singy way, in the kind of way that ended with medical treatment. He looked down at her and said,
Fate is a cruel thing, Lady Felicity. At another time, in another place, you might have had another duke who would have loved you beyond reason.
Before she could respond, he was pushing her out of the way and bounding for the hedge, moving branches aside and reaching one long arm into it. He was mad, clearly. She took a tentative step toward him. Duke? He grunted his reply, half inside the bush. At the risk of being impertinent, may I ask why you are so interested in the hedgerow? She didn't know what he would say. She supposed he might tell her it reminded her of someone or something. Whatever it was that had turned him into this odd man. She might have imagined that he would tell her he had an affinity for nature. After all, he was a notorious London recluse, having spent his whole life in the country. It would not have surprised her if he told her he cared for a particular species of bird in sight, or a weed sprouting below. But she absolutely did not expect him to extract a boy from the hedge. Felicity's jaw dropped as the Duke of Marwick stood up and hauled the young man to his feet.
Do you know our spy?
The child looked to be no more than 10 or 12, long and thin like a bean, with a sooty face and a cap low on his brow. She stepped forward and lifted the brim to see his eyes, blue as the sea and just as defiant. She shook her head. No, the Duke commanded the boy's attention.
Are you watching me?
The boy didn't speak.
No, the Duke said. You wouldn't be in the gardens if you were watching me. You'd be out front, waiting for me to leave. You're watching Lady Felicity, are you not?
I ain't telling you nothing, the young man spat.
Felicity's heart began to pound. You're from the rookery. The Duke's brows rose, but he did not speak. Neither did the boy, but he didn't have to. Felicity did not need confirmation. Something like panic was thrumming through her. Panic and desperation. Is he alive? She asked, watching the boy consider not answering her. She leaned down, staring directly into his eyes. Is he? A little nod. A wave of relief. And the others?
A defiant lift of the chin.
They've holes in them, but yeah.
She closed her eyes for a moment, collecting herself. Then, I have a message for your employer, she said, looking to the Duke. You tell him that I am soon to be married and therefore do not require his attention or yours any longer. Do you understand?
The boy nodded.
What's your name? She asked gently.
Brixton, he said.
Her brows furrowed at the name, and the boy grew defensive.
It's where he found me.
She nodded, hating the way the words tightened her chest. You'd best get back, Brixton. She looked to the Duke. Let him go. Marwick looked to the boy as though he'd just discovered that he was holding a child aloft, and said,
Be sure to tell him about the kiss.
He set Brixton down without hesitation, and the boy was gone like a flash, over the hedge and into the world beyond. She stared after him for longer than she should, wanting to follow him more than she should. Wanting, full stop. Finally, she turned to the Duke, who appeared not at all surprised by the turn of events. Indeed, there was a light in his brown eyes that had not been there before, something that looked like satisfaction, though it made no sense whatsoever why that would be. She took a deep breath. Thank you.
Would you like to tell me about the boy's employer?
She shook her head. I would not. He nodded.
Then tell me this. Was I right or wrong?
About what?
About the kiss being a worthy report for our little watchman.
For a moment, Felicity allowed fantasy to roll through her. The idea that Devil might care that the Duke had kissed her, that he might care that bans would be posted, that he might care that she'd returned home after he'd tossed her out and decided to get on with her life with another man, that he might regret his actions. But that was all it was, a fantasy. She met her fiancé's gaze. You were wrong. Chapter 18 He came to tell her that she couldn't use his boys as messengers. He came to tell her that he had more important things in his life, responsibilities that far outweighed that of a bored wallflower lockpick for whom he had little time and even less interest. He came to tell her that he didn't belong to her, and she should not for a moment think he did. He did not come because Ewan had kissed her. And if he did come because Ewan had kissed her, it wasn't because of Felicity. It was because he knew his brother well enough to know that Ewan was trying to prove a point, trying to send his own message to Devil, that he had his marriage and his heir well within his grasp. Either way, he didn't come for Felicity. At least, that's what Devil told himself as he crossed the back gardens of Bumble House mere hours after Brixton returned to the rookery, with news of the kiss, his subsequent discovery, and the fact that Felicity Faircloth had returned him to deliver a scolding to his employer. Devil tucked his walking stick beneath his arm and began to climb the rose trellis beneath her window. He was a handful of feet above the earth when she spoke from below.
I thought you were dead.
He froze, clinging to the slats and vines for longer than he'd like to admit, loathing the way her voice had his breath catching in his chest and his heart beating slightly faster than it should. It wasn't because of her, he told himself. It was because he was still on edge from the last time he saw her. From the news that the bastard's shipment had been hijacked and their men hurt. From the fact that he'd been with her instead of taking care of his men. That was all. He looked down at her. A mistake. The sun was setting over the Mayfair rooftops, sending rich rays of copper-tinted light into the gardens, catching her dark hair and setting it aflame, along with the satin of her gown. Pink again, now the color of an inferno, thanks to a trick of the light. Not that Devil should have noticed that it was pink. He shouldn't have. He also shouldn't have wondered if she was wearing the undergarments he'd purchased her days ago. He certainly shouldn't have wondered if the undergarments came with pink satin ribbons like he'd asked. Asking for those was another thing he shouldn't have done. Christ, she was magnificent. He shouldn't notice that either, but it was impossible not to, what with how she looked like she'd been forged in fire and sin. She was beautiful, and she was dangerous. She made a man want to fly right to her, not like a moth, like Icarus. The only thing he should notice was that this woman was not for him.
I'm not dead, as you can see.
No, you're quite hale.
"You needn't sound so disappointed," he replied, climbing down a foot or two before letting himself drop to the ground and taking his stick in hand. "I thought you were dead," she repeated, as he turned to face her, her velvet brown eyes a wicked temptation. She was too close, but his back was up against a trellis and he couldn't move.
"And were you very pleased?"
"Oh, yes, I was over the moon," she said pertly. And then, after a moment, "You addle-pated cabbage head." His brows shot up.
"Excuse me?"
"You sent me away," she replied, speaking slowly, as though he were a child who could not remember the events of 2 nights earlier. "You climbed up onto a horse with your idiot weapon, which is no kind of protection from bullets, I might add, and rode off into the darkness without a second thought for me, standing there, in the courtyard of your warehouse, certain you would be killed." Her cheeks were flushed, her nostrils flaring, the pulse in her throat racing. She was more beautiful than she'd ever been. "And then your henchman packed me into a carriage and took me home, as though everything was fine."
"Everything was fine," Devil said.
"Yes, but I didn't know that," she said, her voice high and urgent. "I thought you were dead." He shook his head.
"I'm not."
"No, you're not. You're simply a bastard." With that, she turned on her heel and left him, giving him no choice but to follow her, like a dog on a lead. He didn't care for the comparison nor its aptness, but follow her he did.
"Be careful, Felicity Faircloth, or I shall start to think you concerned for my well-being."
"I'm not," she said without looking back. The sulk in the words made him want to smile, which was strange in itself.
"Felicity,"
she waved a hand in the air as she crossed into the high, labyrinthine shrubbery at the rear of the garden. "You shouldn't be here."
"You summoned me," he said.
She whirled toward him at that, her earlier frustration tipping over into anger. "I didn't know such thing."
"No, didn't you send my boy packing to fetch me?"
"No," she insisted. "I sent Brixton packing because your spies are not welcome in my hedgerow."
"You sent him with a clear message for me."
"It wasn't clear at all if you think I meant to summon you."
"I think you always mean to summon me."
"I," she began, then stopped. "That's ridiculous." He couldn't stop himself from approaching her, from drawing near enough.
"I think you issued a challenge in the yard of my warehouse, looking like a queen. And when I did not rise to it, you thought to bring me to you. You imagined that I'd turn up here, desperate for you."
"I have never imagined you desperate for me." He leaned in.
"Then you're not as creative as I thought. Did you not pronounce to all assembled 2 nights ago that you were not through with me?"
"No, as a matter of fact, I pronounced that I was not through with Covent Garden. That's quite a different thing altogether."
"Not when Covent Garden belongs to me."
She turned away, heading deeper along the hedge path. "I hate to disabuse you of your pompous self-worth, Sarah, but you were not in my thoughts, except to let you know that I was prepared to deliver on my debt to you." He stilled, not liking the words.
"Your debt?"
"Indeed," she tossed over her shoulder. "I thought you'd like to know that your lessons worked." Of all the things she could have said, those were the words most likely to set Devil off.
"Which lessons?"
"Your lessons in passion, of course. The Duke was here this morning to discuss the terms of our marriage, and I took matters in hand." His grip tightened on his cane sword, instinct making him wish he could unsheathe it and set it to his bastard brother's neck.
"What matters?"
She turned, still moving deeper into the gardens, spreading her hands wide as she walked backward, cheeks flushed. "Kissing, of course." And then, as though she'd remarked upon the weather, she completed a full circle and continued away from him. "Did Brixton not report back?" Devil tapped his walking stick in his hand twice. A thread of unease whispered through him. Brixton had reported that Ewan had kissed her, of course. But when Devil had pressed the boy for more information, he'd been told that the caress was short and perfunctory. The very opposite of what had happened with him in the ice hold 2 nights ago. There was nothing perfunctory about the way he and Felicity had come together. So what had happened after Ewan had sent the boy packing?
She wasn't wearing gloves. Had they touched, skin to skin? Had he kissed her with passion? Good God, had she kissed him? Impossible. And yet, I took matters in hand. Devil followed her, coming around a corner to see her headed for one end of an enormous curved stone bench that must have been 20 feet long.
You kissed him.
You needn't say it like you're shocked. Was that not the purpose of your lessons? No. Their kiss might have begun as education, but it had ended as eroticism, pure unfettered pleasure. Pleasure that Devil would refuse to believe she'd been able to echo with Ewan. Pleasure he imagined he might never be able to echo with anyone ever again. But Devil did not say any of that. Instead, he asked,
"And, were you satisfied with the outcome?"
She seated herself, spreading her skirts wide and lifting an embroidery hoop from the bench. "Quite." His blood was rushing in his ears, loud enough to make him wonder if he was going mad.
"What did you do?"
She tilted her head.
"What did I do?
How did you win him over?"
"What are you suggesting? That I shan't singe his wings after all? What happened to, you're not a hog, Felicity Faircloth? With such a rousing assessment from you, how could I not have won him over?"
"You're not a hog," he replied,
feeling like an ass, feeling off balance.
"But that's not the point. You'll never get passion from Marwick."
"Perhaps I won his heart with my remarkable kiss."
Her lips curved in a perfect bow, making him wish they weren't talking about kissing, but doing it instead.
"Impossible."
Her face fell, and he hated himself for the way he stripped her power from her, wanting instantly to return it, even though he shouldn't, even though returning it would only make her more dangerous.
"Is it? Did you not promise me he would? Did you not say I would have him slavering after me, singeing his wings?"
He tapped his cane against his boot.
"I lied,"
she scowled. "Somehow I find myself unsurprised.
Marwick is not a man who can give you passion."
"You don't know that."
"In fact, I do."
"How?"
"Because I've seen him turn his back on it without a second thought."
She narrowed her gaze on him. "No one in London knows him, but you do, don't you?" He hesitated.
"Yes."
"How?"
"It's not important."
What a lie that was.
"As he is going to be my husband, it seems quite important."
"He's not going to be your husband."
He couldn't say that to her, and so he stayed quiet.
"I should have realized it from the beginning," she said. "From the moment you promised him to me. Who is he to you? Who are you to him? How do you have such control over him?"
"No one has control over the Duke of Marwick."
That much was true. That much he could tell her.
"Except you," she said. "Who is he? A rival in business?"
Her brow furrowed.
"Is he the reason your men were shot?"
"No."
At least Devil did not think so. She nodded once, lost to the memory of the night in the rookery. Her gaze found his, full of concern.
"Your men. Brixton said they were not..."
His chest tightened at the realization that even now, even as she released her rage at him, she worried for the well-being of his men, boys she did not know.
"The shipment is gone, but the men live."
The two men had been lucky, all things considered. He and Wit had found them unconscious, not from blood loss, but from cracks to the skull. He'd been awake for nearly 2 straight days, threatening doctors to ensure they remained alive.
"They shall heal."
She released a breath.
"I'm grateful for that."
"Not so grateful as I."
She smirked up at him.
"A pity all your ice was stolen. Strange thing to be on a thief's list."
He raised a brow at her observation.
"People like to keep things cold."
"Of course," she said. "However would they do that without... What is it they call you? The bare-knuckle bastards?"
He nodded.
"Why do they call you that?"
A memory flashed. His first night in London, after 3.5 days without sleep, he, Wit, and Grace huddled together in a corner in the rookery, hungry and scared, with nothing but each other and the lesson their father had taught them.
fight as dirty as you can.
When we arrived in the rookery, we were the best fighters they'd ever seen.
She watched him from her seat. How old were you?
12.
Her eyes went wide. You were children.
Children learn to fight, Felicity.
She thought for a moment, and he wondered if he was in for a soapboxing, a treatise on children's rights, and how he should have had a better childhood, as though he didn't know all that already. He stiffened, preparing himself, but she didn't give it. Instead, she said, "But they shouldn't have to." God knew that was true. She stood then, and his gaze went to her embroidery hoop.
Good God, is that a fox mauling a hen?
She tossed it to the bench. I was angry.
I can see that.
She stepped toward him. So you and Beast were young and you learned to fight.
We were young and we were already fighters, he corrected her. We fought for scraps on the streets for a few weeks before we were discovered by a man who ran a fight ring.
He paused.
The three of us owned it, and then we owned Covent Garden.
The three of you?
Beast, Dahlia, and me.
Dahlia fought. Devil smirked, the memory of Grace in her grimy dress, and then in her first pair of beautiful, shiny boots, bought with her winnings.
She fought harder than the rest of us combined, collected enough winnings to start her own business long before we started ours. We were bare-knuckle babes in comparison. Dahlia, she was the original bare-knuckle bastard.
Felicity smiled. I like her. He nodded.
You're not alone.
But now you don't fight with fists, she said, her gaze lowering to where his bare hand held his cane sword. Her own hand moved, and he wondered if she might touch him. He wondered if he'd let her. Of course he'd let her. He tapped his stick twice against the toe of his boot.
No. Once you learn to use a steel, you don't go back to flesh.
You did what you could to keep yourself safe, your brother and sister, your crew, and a blade was more powerful than a fist. But you do still fight. Felicity was still staring at his knuckles, and he was growing more unsettled by the second. He flexed his fingers, cleared his throat.
Only when I need to. Beast is the one who likes the show.
Her gaze flickered to his. Did you fight the other night? He shook his head.
By the time we got there, the goods were gone.
But you would have. She reached for him, and they were both transfixed as her fingers traced his knuckles, white under the tight grip he held on his cane, crisscrossed with scars and marks, badges earned in the rookery. You would have put yourself in danger. Her touch was pretty poison, making him want to give her everything she wanted, everything he had. He should move.
I would have done what was necessary to keep mine safe.
How noble, she whispered.
No, Felicity Faircloth, he said. Don't go painting me a prince. There's nothing noble about me.
Her beautiful brown eyes found his. I think you're wrong. Her thumb stroked back and forth over his knuckles, and it occurred to Devil that he'd never realized how sensitive the hand was, how powerful a touch there could be. He'd only ever felt pain in his knuckles, and here she was, ruining him with pleasure, making him want to haul her into his arms and show her the same. Except he wasn't supposed to want her. He moved his hand from beneath her touch.
I came to tell you that you cannot summon me.
Her rich brown gaze did not waver. I cannot come to you, and I cannot summon you to me.
No, he said. There's no need for either.
She shook her head and spoke softly, her voice low and lush like a promise. I disagree.
You can't, he said, as though it meant something.
It didn't. In fact, it meant so little that she changed the subject, her gaze tracking over his face as though she were attempting to memorize him. Do you know, I've never seen you in the sunlight.
What?
I've seen you in candlelight, and in the eerie glow of your eyeshold, in the dead of night outside, and in the evening starlight on a ballroom balcony. But I've never seen you in the sunlight. You're very handsome. She was so close, close enough that he could track her gaze as she explored his face, taking in all the faults and angles. Close enough that he could explore hers, perfection to his flaw. And somehow, he couldn't stop himself from saying, "It's strange. All those times we've met in darkness, and I've only ever seen you in sunlight." Her breath caught, and it took all his energy not to touch her. Which didn't matter, as she reached up in that moment and touched him, her fingers like fire on his skin, coasting along his cheekbone and down to his jaw, where she traced the sharp angles of his face, before finally reaching her goal, his scar. The tissue there was strange and sensitive, the nerves unable to distinguish pain from pleasure, and she seemed to know that, her touch remarkably gentle. "How did you get this?" He did not move. He was too afraid that if he did, she might stop touching him. Too afraid also that she might touch him more. It was agony. He swallowed. "My brother." Her brow furrowed, and her gaze flew to his. "Beast." He shook his head. "I didn't know you had another brother."
"There are many things you don't know about me."
She nodded. "That's true," she said softly. "Is it wrong that I would like to learn them all?" Christ, she was going to kill him. He took a step back, and the loss of her touch threatened the same. He looked away, desperate for something to say, something that did not involve kissing her, until neither of them remembered all the reasons they could not be together. Reasons that were legion. He cleared his throat, focusing on the strange shape of the bench behind her.
"Why is this bench curved?"
For a long moment, she seemed too busy watching him to reply, her focus making him curse the daylight and wish there were shadows in which he could hide. He should leave. Except she answered him. "It's a whispering bench," she said. "The acoustics of it are designed so that if someone is whispering at this end, the person on the other end can hear them. It's said to have been gifted to one of the ladies of the house by her gardener. They were..." She blushed, beautiful and honest, then cleared her throat. "They were lovers." That blush nearly killed him. He considered the bench, then moved to the far end, leaning back, his thighs wide, draping one arm over the back of it, forcing himself to seem casual.
"So if I sit here..."
She moved on cue, resuming her spot on the opposite end. She looked down at her lap. And then she spoke, the words in his ear as though she were next to him, as though she were touching him. "No one would ever know what we are to each other." It was rare that Devil was surprised, but the bench surprised him. Or perhaps Felicity's words surprised him. Perhaps it was the idea that they might hold weight, that the two of them might be something to each other. He immediately looked to her, but she remained transfixed by her embroidery hoop.
"No one would ever know we were speaking," he said.
She shook her head. "The perfect meeting place for spies." His lips twitched at that.
"Do you notice a great deal of clandestine visits to your gardens?"
She was not so hesitant with her smile. "There's been an uptick in the use of my rose trellis recently." She looked to him and whispered, "One must be prepared for anything." He was transfixed by the shape of her, by the straightness of her spine and the rise and fall of her breasts, the softness of her jaw and the swell of her torso. She was Reuben's Delilah, making him wish he were Samson, at her feet, draped over her sun-kissed skirts, willing to give her anything, even his power.
"Do you know the story of Janus?"
She tilted her head. "The Roman god." He leaned back, extending his legs far in front of him.
"The god of doors and locks."
"They have a god?"
"And a goddess, as a matter of fact."
"Tell me." The whisper was full of anticipation, and he turned to look at her, finding her warm brown gaze spellbound. He couldn't help his smile.
"All the times I've tried to tempt you, Felicity Faircloth, then all I had to do was tell you about the god of locks."
"You've done quite well tempting me without that, but I should like to hear anyway." Devil's heart pounded at her honesty,
and it was an exercise in control to stay where he was.
He had two faces. One always saw the future, the other always the past. There wasn't a secret in the world that could be kept from him, because he knew the inside and the outside, the beginning and the end. His omniscience made him the most powerful of the gods, rivaling Jupiter himself.
She was leaning toward him, and his gaze flickered to the place where her skin, freckled in the sun, rose up from the silk of her dress. The bodice was pulled tight with the angle of her body, and Devil was only a man after all. He lingered there, watching her breasts strain for freedom. It was beautiful, but nothing like the look in her eyes as she repeated her request. Tell me. The words made him feel like a king. He wanted to tell her stories for the rest of time, to entertain her, to linger in her presence and learn the ones that fascinated her, the ones that struck to the very core of who she was, his beautiful lockpick. Not his. He put the thought aside and continued.
But seeing the future and the past is as much curse as a gift, you see, and for every beautiful beginning, he also saw the painful end. And this was Janus's devastation, because he could see death in life and tragedy in love.
How awful, Felicity whispered in his ear from too far away.
He did not sleep, did not eat. He found pleasure in no one and nothing, as he spent all his time, an eternity of time, guarding the past, warding against the inevitable future. Where other gods rivaled and battled for access to each other's power, none warred with Janus. They saw the pain he suffered and steered far clear of it.
She leaned forward, that dress pulling even more, tempting even more, like the future that could be seen and not warded against. I imagine he was not a cheerful deity. He gave a little bark of laughter.
He was not.
Her eyes widened, and she sat up.
What is it?
Nothing, only you laugh so rarely. She paused. And I like it. His cheeks warmed, like he was a goddamn boy. He cleared his throat.
At any rate, Janus could see the future and knew it brought only tragedy. Except there was one thing he could not see, a thing he could not predict.
Her brown eyes twinkled. A woman.
What makes you say that?
She waved a hand in the air. It's always a woman if it's unpredictable. We're changeable like the weather, did you not know? Unlike men who always act with clear and logical purpose. She ended with a dry harumph. He inclined his head.
It was a woman.
Ah, you see.
Would you like me to tell you the story or not?
She leaned back against the bench, cradling her face in her hand. Yes, please.
Her name was Cardia, and he could not see her coming, but once she was there, he saw her in bright, vivid color, and hers was the greatest beauty he had ever known.
Aren't they always the greatest beauty, these unpredictable women?
You think you are so smart, Felicity Faircloth.
She grinned. Am I not?
Not in this case, because, you see, no one else could see her beauty. She was plain and uninteresting to the rest of the gods. She'd been made so before birth, as punishment to her mother, who'd crossed Juno. And so the daughter was punished with mediocrity.
Well, I certainly can understand that, she said quietly. And it occurred to Devil she'd not meant for him to hear the words. He wouldn't have, if not for the bench.
But she was not plain, and she was not uninteresting. She was beautiful beyond measure, and Janus could see it. He could see the beginning of her and the end of her. And in her, he saw something he had never allowed himself to see.
Her full lips opened on a tiny inhale. He had her. What did he see?
The present.
He would have stayed there forever on that bench, imprisoned by her rapt attention.
He'd never cared for it before. Not until she arrived.
Not until she showed him what it could be. What happened?
They married, and on the consummation of their marriage, Janus, the god with two faces, became the god with three. But only Cardia saw the third face. It was for her alone, the face that experienced happiness and joy and goodness and love and peace. The face that saw the present. Only Cardia was gifted a look at the god in his full, glorious form, as only Janus was gifted a look at his goddess in the same way.
She unlocked him, Felicity whispered, and the words threatened to bring Devil to his knees. He nodded.
She was his key.
The words came like wheels on gravel.
And because she had gifted him the present, he gave her what he could of the past and future, of beginnings and ends. The Romans worshipped Janus for the first month of the year, but by his will they honored Cardia on the first day of every month, the end of what had been, the beginning of what was to come.
And then? What became of them?
They reveled in each other, he replied, gloried in having finally found the other being in all the world who could see them for who they were. They are never apart. Janus, forever the god of the lock, Cardia, forever the goddess of the hinge. And the earth keeps turning.
She slid toward him for just a moment, just until she realized what she was doing, that she shouldn't be moving, that it wasn't proper. Not that anything between them had ever been proper. He wanted her near him, touching him. This bench was a torture device.
Did you like the kiss?
He shouldn't have asked it, but she replied nonetheless. Which one? He raised a brow.
I know you liked the one we shared.
Such modesty.
It's not conceit. You liked it.
He paused.
And so did I.
She inhaled sharply, and he heard it as well as saw it, the way she straightened. Perhaps it was the ease of whispering, but he couldn't stop himself from adding, "Has anyone ever told you that you have a beautiful blush?" Red crept to her cheeks. "No."
"You do. It makes me think of summer berries and sweet cream."
She looked down at her lap.
"You shouldn't. It makes me wonder what I can't see that has gone pink. It makes me wonder if all that pink tastes as sweet as it looks."
"You shouldn't."
"I know your lips are sweet. Your nipples too. Did you know they are the same color? That pretty pink perfection."
Her cheeks were flaming. "Stop," she whispered, and he could swear he heard the sound of her breathing along their secret stone pathway. He lowered his voice to a whisper.
"Do you think we offend the bench?"
She gave a little laugh, and he went hard at the sound, so close and with her so impossibly far away.
"Because I imagine that when this bench was gifted to the lady of the house, her lover sat on the far end and said much worse."
She looked to him then, and he saw the heat in her gaze, the curiosity. Felicity wanted to hear worse. Better.
"Shall I tell you what I imagine he said?" he asked.
She nodded, barely, but enough, and miraculously she didn't look away. She wanted to hear more, and she wanted to hear it from him.
"I imagine he told her that he built this place inside this web of hedgerows so that no one would see. Because, you see, Felicity Fairest, it's not enough that we can whisper and not be heard. Because you reveal everything you think and feel on your beautiful open face."
She lifted one hand to her cheek, and he continued his soft litany.
"I imagine the lady's lover adored the way her emotions played across her face, the way her lips fell open like temptation incarnate. I imagine he marveled at the pink of them, wondering at the way they matched the perfect tips of her round breasts, and the pink perfection of somewhere else entirely."
She gasped, her eyes flying to his. He smirked.
"I see you are not as innocent of thought as you would like others to believe, love."
"You should stop."
"Probably," he replied. "But would you prefer I continue?"
"Yes." Christ, that word alone, the glory of it, rioted through him. He wanted to hear it from her again and again as he talked and touched and kissed. He wanted it as her fingers scraped through his hair, as they clutched his shoulders, as they directed his mouth wherever she wanted him to go. He made to rise, to go to her and continue with his hands and his lips, but she stayed him.
"Devil,"
He met her gaze. You lied to me. 100 times 1,000.
About what?
Marwick was never going to singe his wings.
No.
Not the devil would have let it get that far. Not once he realized how hot she burned. I still want the singed wings. The sun was leaving, and the darkness was falling, and with it, his ability to resist her. He shook his head.
I can't make him want you.
I won't. What a fucking mess he'd made. He'd lost control of all of it. Ceded all his power to this woman who had no understanding of how she wielded it. She shook her head. I don't want Marwick. She was 20 feet away, and the whispered words sounded like gunfire in his ears, but he still didn't believe he'd heard them correctly.
Say it again.
Felicity was watching him from her end of the bench, her velvet brown eyes unwavering. Marwick isn't my moth.
Who, then?
You, she whispered. He was already moving toward her, fire already consuming him, knowing he'd never survive it. Chapter 19. She wanted him. Not this moment, on the whispering bench in the gardens, though that too. She wanted him forever. And not only because she didn't want the strange Duke, who seemed uninterested in marriage, and even less interested in the trappings of it. No, she wanted him, because she wanted a man who kissed her like she was everything he would ever want. She wanted a man who teased her, and then bewitched her with long-ago stories. She wanted a man who made promises to her that only he could keep. She wanted this man. Devil. She didn't know his name or his past, but she knew his eyes and his touch, and the way he saw her and listened to her, and she wanted him, for a partner, for a future. Here, in the gardens of her family home, in Covent Garden, in Patagonia, wherever he liked. And when he went to his knees in front of her, like he'd been there 1,000 times before, placing one hand on her hip and the other around her neck to pull her to him and kiss her, she wanted him even more. And not only because his kiss made her want to live here, on this bench, his whispered temptation in her ears, his lips on her skin, for the rest of her life.
Felicity Faircloth, you shall ruin me, he whispered, taking her mouth, stealing kisses between his words. I swore I would come here, to tell you to leave me alone, to tell you to forget about me.
Her hands came to his shoulders, clutching the fabric of his shirt as he slid his lips across her cheek, taking the lobe of her ear between his teeth and worrying it. I don't want to leave you alone, she whispered. I don't want to forget about you. I don't want to marry another. He pulled away, putting enough distance between them that he could search her face.
Why?
How could he ask her that? How could she find the answer?
Because I want to see all of you, she replied, the echo of the story he'd just told her. I want to see your past and your future.
He shook his head.
I'm not a god, Felicity Faircloth. I'm the very opposite of one. And you're too good for my past or my future.
What of your present? She wanted to ask him desperately. Instead, she pulled him to her and he came, kissing her again, growling low in the back of his throat, licking over her lips until she opened for him and he could tease inside, tempting her. She sighed, and he rewarded the sound by deepening the kiss, one hand scrambling her hairpins as the other found her ankle, smooth and bare beneath her skirts. His warm fingers wrapped around her ankle, strong and firm, then began to tease up the inside of her leg.
Again no stockings, he said. My wicked wallflower.
Wait, she gasped, and he did, his touch stilling instantly when she pulled back from him, wanting to see his eyes, those beautiful amber eyes ringed in black. Why do you lie to me?
Do I lie to you?
She searched his face for a long moment before she said, I think you do, you know. I think you lie every time you look at me.
I lie every time I look at anyone.
Tell me something true, she said.
I want you.
The words were instant, and she saw the honesty in them. Pleasure thrummed through her. It wasn't enough. Something else. He shook his head.
There is nothing else. Not right now.
Another lie, she whispered, but she leaned in and kissed him anyway, feeling his desire, matching it with her own. When the kiss ended, they were both panting. He wrapped a large, firm hand around the back of her neck and pressed his forehead to hers. He closed his eyes and said, achingly soft,
"It's the only truth. I want you. I've never in my life even dreamed of wanting something like you. Something pristine and perfect."
His eyes opened, finding hers instantly.
"It's like wanting sunlight."
This man was going to be the end of her. He was going to ruin her for all others.
"You can't hold sunlight, though," he whispered. "No matter how much you wish to touch it, it slips through your fingers, chased away by the dark."
She shook her head. "You're wrong. Sunlight is not chased away by dark. It fills it up." And then she kissed him again, and he took control, tempering her eagerness with his superior skill, making the caress low and long and deep, his fingers tracing up the inside of her leg. She let him touch her, let him tease her knee, made room for his touch on that skin that had never been touched before. She gasped as he moved higher, his touch like a whisper, barely there and consuming her nonetheless. He broke the kiss.
"So soft," he said,
pressing warm, full kisses down the column of her neck as she gasped her pleasure.
"Like silk."
He stroked up her thigh, leaving fire in his wake until he reached a satin and lace edge. He fingered the ribbon he found there, and she willed it gone.
"Are these?"
She nodded, knowing she should be more embarrassed, not caring. "The ones you gave me."
"If I were to look..."
He tugged on the tie, loosening the pant leg, and she closed her eyes at the sensation.
"They would be pink."
She nodded.
"May I?"
Her eyes shot open. "May you what?"
"May I look?"
"Only if you promise to touch as well." Somehow she refrained from saying the words, but she could not refrain from nodding, knowing she shouldn't, knowing that she wanted everything he promised. The moment she did, he moved, sitting back to lift her skirts and reveal her. Her cheeks blazed as he reached for the pink silk ribbons.
"I will remember these pretty pink ribbons," he said softly,
to himself more than her, as his warm fingers slid beneath along her thigh, beneath the fabric.
"For the rest of my life."
She leaned back, giving him more access. "I will remember this." His gaze flickered to hers, his hand moving up to her waist, to another pink ribbon, one he could not see but undid effortlessly nonetheless.
"This,"
she gasped. "Yes." He clasped the waistband.
"Shall I give you other memories, love?"
"Yes," she whispered, and he tugged, removing the undergarment with efficiency. "Please." Tossing it to the side, he returned his hands to her legs, now fully bare, draped in the pink silk of her dress.
"So much prettier without the ribbons," he whispered,
pressing a soft kiss to her knee, the caress sending heat rioting through her.
"Open for me, love."
Perhaps it was the feel of the command against that skin that no one had ever touched. Perhaps it was the sound of it, the growl that set her heart to pounding. But it was very likely the rest that had Felicity opening her thighs to the air and the sun and this magnificent man. It was the endearment. Love. He was dangerous indeed. Because the moment she did as he asked, his strong, warm, work-hewn hands came to the insides of her knees and held her open, his gaze locked to the shadowed space between her thighs, his throat working as though he were holding himself back from... She reached for him, her fingers trailing down the side of his face, running over his scar, stark white but for the muscle twitching beneath it.
"You look as though..."
He met her eyes, and what she saw there took her breath.
"You look... hungry."
His hands moved then, beautifully, sliding up her thighs, pushing her skirts as far back as they would go.
"I'm hungry for you, Felicity Faircloth. I'm starved for you."
His fingers reached the dark curls that shielded her sex.
"I want to touch you, love, and I want more. I want to taste you."
The words might have shocked her, but he punctuated them with a gentle stroke, a slow slide as he parted her.
"I want to know every inch of you. What gives you pleasure?"
A movement, a deep, delicious groan.
"You're so wet for me."
A blush rose on her cheeks, and he shook his head, coming up on his knees to steal a kiss.
"No," he whispered. "Never be embarrassed of that. You want it, don't you? My touch?"
She closed her eyes.
"Yes,
more than anything."
"You want my kiss?"
She pulled him to her, took his lips.
"Yes." "Greedy girl. You may have it any time you ask."
The words sent a flood of liquid fire through her.
"I want it now."
He laughed at the words, low and rough.
"I want to give it to you."
He stroked, and she gasped.
"You like that?"
She nodded, lifting her hips toward his touch.
"Here."
A long, lingering touch.
"Or here."
A slow circle, firm and gentle. She gasped.
"Ah," he said. "There."
Another circle, and her spine went straight, her fingers tightening on his shoulder, her eyes closing, her mouth dropping open.
"Yes, there, please."
The circular strokes continued, lazy and perfect, and thought scrambled. She reached down to grasp his hand, her fingers circling his wrist.
"Do you wish me to stop?"
"No," she gasped.
"Yes, I don't..."
He did. And she hated him a little for it. Her eyes opened.
"Don't stop."
He leaned in and kissed her again, then said,
"I think I should show you something else."
"But I liked that," she protested.
"You shall like this more," he whispered.
She arched toward him as his fingers retreated.
"Devil, please." "Devon."
She met his gaze, clear and beautiful, and full of something she did not quite recognize.
"What?" "Call me Devon."
Her heart threatened to pound from her chest, her hand sliding up over his cheek.
"Devon."
In response, he lowered his head to her thigh, as though in worship. Which was mad, of course. He was the one who deserved worship. She stroked his hair, her fingers trembling with need for him. For his kiss, yes. His touch, yes. But him...
"Devon," she whispered again.
The name unlocked him, and he pressed a soft kiss to her thigh and another, chasing the soft skin to her sex, her hands still stroking his smooth, short hair. He parted her folds, opening her to his gaze, and for a moment she struggled, embarrassed by his actions, until he spoke, his breath hot and devastating against her.
"So beautiful."
He pressed a kiss directly above her sex, inhaling deeply, as though summoning strength.
"I shouldn't have told you. Now you own me."
If only it were true. And still.
"Devon."
He looked up at her then, his eyes all she could see.
"Show me what you like."
She shook her head.
"I don't know." "You will."
And then he was kissing her, and she was lost, gasping her pleasure as he pressed his tongue into her softness and made love to her with those slow, languid circles he'd discovered she liked so much. Felicity was undone, her hands at his head as his tongue stroked over the swollen, aching center of her, sending wave after wave of pleasure through her. Her fingers tightened, holding him against her. She moved against him, and Devon groaned, letting her use him, savoring her, impossibly, like she was all he'd ever desired. At the sound, Felicity released him, embarrassed, and he lifted his head instantly, ending her pleasure.
"No,"
she shook her head, raising her hands.
"I'm sorry, I didn't..."
He reached for one of them, pressing a kiss to the center of her palm as he returned it to his head.
Don't ever apologize for taking what you want, love, for showing me how to give you pleasure.